start. And 3, 2, 1.
Welcome back to the Developmental Podcast for yet another edition of the NXT Roundtable, where once again, Innes has not turned up because he hasn't watched the show. I don't think he likes NXT. I'm coming to that conclusion. Joining me right now is a contributor to Inside the Ropes Wrestling, or just ITR Wrestling. That's a much catchier website name. He does the results for NXT on there and on Twitter as well. It's Liam Stewart. Liam, how are you?
I'm great. I do indeed do the results and the live tweets for NXT, but I also do them for Monday Night Raw, and today's Tuesday. I can say the date because this has to go up today, otherwise this podcast is aged poorly because this week's NXT will have come out. I'm really tired. I had to watch Lana win another match.
Lana wins and goes through a table.
I put a tweet out, right? And I was like, honestly, who finds this Lana table spot funny? Like, who are you? Expecting people to be like, it's Vince McMahon. And some of the people were like that. And some of the people just said they found it funny. And at that point, I realised wrestling fans don't deserve a sense of humour.
It's just not a good idea. It's not a good idea at all for them. And like, I tuned in for maybe about 45 minutes of Raw, because that's generally all I can handle, because I don't wish to self-harm, but also I really enjoy watching from afar and just realizing, like following through on Twitter and just seeing how I have indeed made the right decision to not continue with watching Raw, because Liam, Retribution's doing really well, huh?
I don't get it. I don't get it at all. So Retribution and the Hurt Business were facing off an 8-man elimination action, and I was like, oh, this makes perfect sense. Retribution can get like an early lead. Hurt Business can come back. We can come down to Lashley, Cedric Alexander, and Mustafa Ali. Mustafa Ali and Cedric Alexander can throw back to that Cruiserweight tournament that culminated at Mania, where Alexander won. That's nice storytelling. Mm-hmm. Then Ali gets a clean win over Lashley. That sets up the US title match next week. Ali wins. That legitimizes Retribution a little bit and also gives us Sami Zayn versus Mustafa Ali at Survivor Series. And instead, Mustafa Ali got himself disqualified to cost the match. We're getting to revisit that wonderful Lashley-Sami Zayn feud at Survivor Series that featured sisters. So,
yes.
Retribution can't win for shit.
Yeah, and then they do a promo. It's like the Bray Wyatt syndrome from 2016, where he'll promo, lose, and we just go in this endless cycle. And Keith Lee has lost all resemblance of his former self, because he just goes through generic WWE dialogue of, oh, he likes to call himself tagline. Well, next time I'm in the ring with Superstar, he's gonna see that I am play on tagline. Because if you are a female feud, you just have the word bitch in there, and then you're got just about the same kind of thing. So, yeah,
Roar is void of all personality. The next time he steps in the ring with me, he really will be a dead man.
Yeah, there we go.
The only people I've seen that are allowed to cut, like, unique style promos on Raw. Drew, to be fair, not a massive Drew fan, but I've actually enjoyed the last few weeks of his little talking style, because he gets to do, like, that break the third wall a little bit, which is nice. Mm-hmm. I mean, Randy just cuts Randy promos, but at least they're different to everything else. The Miz gets to cut, like, Miz-style promos, which is nice. And Mustafa Ali gets to cut nice promos and then lose. He's 0-4. Well, Retribution are 0-4 since debuting.
Yeah, going well. Going really well. Maybe next time.
To add to Lana going through the table for the sixth time, we've got this new running thing of Jeff Hardy and Elias hitting each other over the back with guitars. Because what everyone wants is a Proxy Gen versus Elias Battle of the Bands. That's really probably where this is going.
hey, if we get Jeff Hardy singing Modest on Raw TV, then I would pop for that and I would watch that. That's for sure. But Elias is just that. He's the inevitable of WWE at the moment, where he mm-hmm. is just on TV all. And I know he's been gone for 6 months. He could have been gone for a year and I wouldn't have noticed. It would have been nice, but he's just on TV all the time. And as according to various news websites, such as a very prominent one that I don't have the name of right now, he's going to be a permanent fixture of WWE TV or just Raw TV going forward. And to that I say, cool, let me know when he isn't and I'll come back.
Yeah. So I was thinking about that. So reason we're talking about Survivor Season Raw in particular, ties in my next team, we'll get to that in a minute. Mm-hmm. We'll talk a little bit about Hell in a Cell because we revisit some iconic NXT moments. But I realised that not only is SmackDown just better at the moment, mm-hmm. which is fine, you know, the show switch, and, you know, to be fair, I considered that maybe after the brand it might switch. But I was looking through the roster of Raw.
Yep.
And I realised it's the most sports entertainment roster I think Raw has had in a while. And as Mr. I Like Actual Wrestling, that's kind of dreadful for me because we just look at some of the names here. We've got R-Truth, who's funny, but that title needs to die. We have John Morrison. We've got Ivar, Humberto Carrillo, Elias, Drew McIntyre, Dabakato, Bray Wyatt, Braun Strowman, Bobby Lashley, The Big Show, Angel Garza, and I don't want to watch any of them.
It's not the best roster. Like, let's not pretend it isn't. As far as the 24/7 title goes, it just needs to be on someone not R-Truth for a while, because it's just been on R-Truth for a year and a half, and, like, they just need to stop chasing, because it's just the same joke over and over and over again. I would, like I've been saying for well over a year and a half since they introduced it, do something else with it. Try new things. Try and be creative with it instead of just hammering the same joke into the ground, but that is WWE. Yeah, like, when I do catch SmackDown, it is just better. They have more compelling stories. With Raw, it doesn't really matter if you aren't the best wrestler in the world. If you have a compelling story and a storyline, then I'm probably going to watch and get invested. Unfortunately, Raw is too long to tell good stories. It's just too long. So long. Oh my god, it's so long.
Yeah, it is really long as I try to move the mic as far away from the sound of that Hoover. Just always is. As soon as I start recording, they decide that they're going to hoover.
Great.
Rhodes, that's the thing as well. I watch NXT, and it starts at midnight this week. It'll be done for 2 a.m. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Great length of show. Fits just about everything they need in. Mm-hmm. Spot on. Raw is... The one thing I will give it is that they put frequent enough ad breaks for me to be able to catch up, because otherwise it would be fucking horrible, because it's like segment that lasts 20 seconds and is non-consequential, but I need to write down in case it comes back up later. Oh, it has come back up later. Fucking great, here we go. Are you familiar with the Raw women's team for Survivor Series?
I did see the end result. It's Shayna and Nia, Dana and Mandy, and then Lana won her spot, to which it just comes down to, oh, lol, women don't have to, we don't have to put more women on the show, we can just throw four in there immediately, and we'll just do one match for the fifth. Dana, it's 2020, late 2020, and we're still trying with Dana, we're still going.
I'll tell you what. Dana and Mandy are the most enjoyable part of that five-person team. They've been all right. In fact, to be fair, Shayna and I are doing this kind of almost buddy cop, like, one of them's the sleazy one that wants to sleep around, and Nia and Shayna's, like, really Angel Garza, and that was all right. You know why they didn't do, like, four, matches to decide the team? Because there are six active women that aren't champions. So you've got Reckoning.
Mm-hmm.
You got Peyton Royce.
Yep.
You've got Mandy Rose.
Yep.
You have Lana. You have Lacey Evans and Dana Brooke. Alexa Bliss hasn't wrestled because she's doing this fiend thing, which is 12:32 p.m. And that would be Amazon Alexa. Wonderful.
That is amazing. That was solid.
So good. In total, there are Asuka's the champ, so she's going to be mm-hmm. facing Sasha Banks. Moi bien. Becky Lynch is on maternity leave.
Yep.
Charlotte Flair is on surgical procedure leave.
Mm-hmm.
Nia Jax and Tina Baszler are tag champs.
Yeah. So, and I mean, look,
all the women you would want on Survivor Series can't be.
Well, yeah, and that sucks. But, like, even of the people that you do have, like, Nia and Shayna should be there. That's fine. Nia, Shayna, Nikki Cross, Lacey Evans, Peyton Royce. Like, that's a women's team. Boom, done, yeah. Let's move on, go to the next thing. But no, we have to flesh it out because Lana is the troll story that they're trying to do, and it's very dull.
I'm watching it from afar,
and it's not enticing me to watch.
I think she gets taken out. So I think we do something where the extent of the injuries from Nia is repeated back bumps, like table spots, mean that Lana gets taken out just before Survivor Series. Not everyone's shouting at Nia to find someone, and she's like, I'll sort it, and I'll read everything at Survivor Series. Because, hell, if you're going to replace anyone with Eva Marie, you might as well use the B-Tech one.
True. Hey, if the big reveal at Survivor Series is that Eva Marie replaces Lana, then fine, I'll pay it, but if it's not, then what's the point of it all, really? I did watch Hell in a Cell. I still haven't watched Roman and Jay. That's the, like, I started watching Hell in a Cell because I watched it live, but I was 45 minutes late, so I missed the first match.
I'm the same. I missed the first match.
So I think I've heard good things. If you like story, which I do, then I would like that match. So I will go back and watch it at some stage. I'll watch it before SmackDown. But as far as like Jeff Hardy and Elias, that it was pointless. That just happened. And then it was mm-hmm. Bobby Lashley and Slapjack, which, you know, it's nice that Shane Thorne got a match on a pay-per-view, but he was as Slapjack and got barely anything in. So that's a shame for Slapjack.
So why didn't they just do the 8-man then? Like, if their plan was to do an 8-man. That's a good question. We have an opportunity at the United States Championship. Who are we going to send? Let's send the second shittest member of Retribution.
Ooh. I mean, yeah, why wouldn't you send, like, one of the big dudes? Like,
yeah. Why wouldn't you want to win? Also,
yeah, they did the
8-man yesterday and had Mia Yim Reckoning, get involved to provide the distraction for someone to get eliminated. And it wasn't Shelton Benjamin. Like, you finally got the opportunity to, like, pay off to the fans that are aware that they, like, they're really good friends and have this, like, back and forth rivalry. But nah, she's got to distract MVP, who's been
also
a bit of it, right?
She was, like, convulsing on the floor, and I assume fiend bullshit, but, like, she was convulsing on the floor, but weren't they yelling Mia at her? Like, it's...
I think... Yeah. It might have been, actually.
Because if that's the case, what the hell are they doing?
I overthought it to fuck and decided that Ali is controlling them all through chips underneath their masks. Like, he came across them all at dark points, you know, Mia had just lost to Candice, Dominic had just lost to Keith Lee again and been attacked by Cross, and while he was knocked out by Cross, he slipped a little chip in and the mask now allows him to control it. That's why they aren't good wrestlers, and they're ineffective. That's why they don't recall who they were in the past, so they don't, like, pay tribute by using their old finishers like the Feast Your Eyes and Eat Defeat and Soul Food.
If that was the... If that,
Mustafa,
if
Mustafa is the sole evil behind it, and it means when they want to split up, boom, one of them, their mask eventually comes off, you've got Dominik Dijakovic ready to go and do something good. Only thing is, that required thought, and WWE writers won't do that.
If that was the story, I'd be all in on that. Like, evil...
Just go sci-fi bullshit, yeah.
You don't want to, like, be vulnerable because Mustafa Ali might slip a chip in you, and boom, you're part of Retribution, which sounds way worse than it actually is, and we won't go there.
I was going to say, maybe too much of an NXT UK storyline.
Obviously, the other two things that we have seen were the two Hell in a Cell matches where Drew and Randy were fine, but, like, glad it's done. They weren't bad, were there.
It's not even done. It ended the draw with them feuding again, like, fighting again.
Here's the thing. And I know we do have a Scottish contingent, because funnily enough, but... Drew McIntyre, Randy Orton is the program that people are saying, oh yeah, it's good, it's good. It's like they've done a good program. It's the exact same way that a friend keeps pumping up, going like, you should see this movie, it's great. Like, you'll love it, I think it's really good. And then you see it and you're like, I mean, it's fine, but like, are you going to town on that? Really? That's what you want to do? That's what Drew McIntyre, Randy Orton is for me. It's like the story that's been overhyped by everyone else, and then you're watching like, I mean, it's fine, there's nothing particularly wrong with it, it's just there.
It's also pure sports entertainment. It is pure sports entertainment. It's not like, I'm not saying Eli Manning is a bad wrestler, but its primary focus is like the old school 90s style, 80s style match build. Whereas we saw earlier in the night, Bayley and Sasha continued their rivalry that started all the way back in NXT and put on possibly the best women's match of all time. So,
I think it was so good.
Yeah. I think it's better than Respect, not as good as Brooklyn. Because it's, Brooklyn had a crowd. I think it had a crowd.
Mm-hmm. A very
different match.
I think if this Hell in a Cell match had a crowd, we'd be looking at a very different... because people are like, oh, it's not as good as Brooklyn, or it's not as good as Respect, or whatever, but, like, the difference is they had a crowd, this didn't. If this had a crowd, oh my god, would this maybe have topped it? Because it was so good. It was the best use of Hell in a Cell that I've seen in ages, even if it isn't red and awful and, like, distracting. It's just... really, really good wrestling, and it's really good to see a character story be told off. Those two are magic together, and like, it's one of those things where you just they're two opponents where like, you'll never get sick of those two wrestling each other because they are the best at wrestling each other.
Yeah, they are like the, and their gear reflected that they are the yin and yang of one another, and we've seen who is lightness and who is dark switch. Which was great, and the match was vicious, it was all out. Big fan. May note of Survivor Series, actually, the reason we mentioned it, NXT is not involved. On Hell in a Cell, they showed the yellow in the graphic, so I was led to believe it would be, making me think we were going to get Asuka versus Io versus Sasha. It's just going to be Asuka versus Sasha, which is fine, but we've seen it before. Like, it's good, but we've seen it before. Yesterday they revealed it's going to be 5 versus 5 matches, and then they ran down the cards, so like US champ versus Intercontinental champ, no mention of NXT. So NXT's not involved.
Mm-hmm.
From a Survivor Series point of view, I think that lessens it, because a lot of these matches would immediately become more interesting if you're looking at something like Damian Priest versus Bobby Lashley versus Sami Zayn, or Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch versus... The New Day versus Street Profits.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually doing the world champs all facing off this time, so it would have been Randy versus Roman versus Finn.
Yeah.
And we're not getting that. But from an NXT point of view, we can continue with NXT stories without being affected by brand warfare.
Well, that's the thing. NXT is having its own problems at the moment through injuries and stuff, keeping track of everything. So, I do get that. Also, like, you think COVID of the, sorry?
I was just thinking that the NXT roster will be one bubble, and the main roster will be another bubble, because the main roster aren't at the PC anymore.
Yeah, so, that's probably it. Yeah. It just keeps... Also... also, like, you think of the people who, like, got, like, last Survivor Series, Keith Lee and Rhea Ripley, like, they exploded onto the scene last Survivor Series. So it's a shame that we may not get that this year. But also at the same time, because last year NXT got a huge showing, they won Survivor Series last year. I'm worried, like, they would never do that 2 years in a row, and it makes you worry, like, what they do to NXT this year. So it's almost like I'm okay with them not being a part of it, but I'm like, it doesn't make Survivor Series more interesting with them not around, obviously. But oh well, we have Halloween Havoc next week, and well, as we're recording this tomorrow, so I'm excited about that instead.
I'm just trying to work out how much hoovering one person needs to do at 12:43 in the afternoon. It's fine. I'm looking at the mic, and when I speak, it doesn't really hear. I don't think we'll find out when I edit this afterwards. But let's hop into NXT just now. It is the 21st of October edition of NXT, episode 426. Before the show announced was Isaiah Swerve Scott, Jake Atlas, and Nishante Adonis taking on Legado del Fantasma. Mm-hmm. Champa, Kushida, and Dream facing off in triple threat action. Ambrose Angle were set to defend their NXT Tag Team Championship against the Undisputed Era, which didn't happen, but we'll get to that.
Mm.
We open straight with the triple threat match between Kushida, Dream, and Champa. They were brawling backstage, and Rigo goes, "I'm going to do this now." Pretty solid match, gotta say. Probably one of the more enjoyable openers we had on NXT recently.
Mm-hmm.
Just hard hitting, really hard hitting. Dream gets targeted early on by Kushida and Champa, who both have a problem with him. Back and forth. I described in my live results as a very 2010 fashion match, where it wasn't much wrestling. They were just kind of punching each other, lots of kicks, lots of environmental offense, you know, proper we hate each other match. Kushida continued that sort of more ruthless side target in the arms of both, which I thought was great. Dream even broke up the armbar with a purple rainmaker, but it's lovely. Kushida did like this suicide dive at one end, run back, suicide dive at the other, run back. Really nice, really crisp. Champa goes to grab Dream on the out, or Dream goes up on the apron to hit Champa with his cast that he's been wearing to sell the injuries sustained by Kushida. Kushida kind of shoves Champa so that not only does Champa get hit by the cast, but Dream falls down. Kushida gets the three count with a deadlift German, which was nice. Technically not a clean win for Kushida, but Kushida doesn't know that. Really good opener, high pace, lots of offense, very vicious, correct result, and when he's fit, it should be Finn Balor versus Kushida. What are your thoughts, Michael?
It was a good match. Kushida getting a big win, a necessary win in order to really establish him into, because he beat Dream at TakeOver, and now he beats Dream and Champa on TV. Like, that's a big step up for him. He's no longer an afterthought anymore, which is good. I am going to be honest, didn't see a ton of this match because, humble brag, I was in the middle of responding to a reporter who was doing a news article about my TikTok account, so I was in the middle of answering those questions, but I can send you the link if people want it. What I did see of the match in between answering and whenever I heard something pick up with through commentary and stuff, it was good. So, from what I saw, I liked the result, and you know, it's always really nice to see Dream get his ass kicked.
It is. It really is. I think what's interesting here is, I feel like this moves into Dream versus Champa, and Kushida moves away from Dream now.
Yeah, maybe.
Hopefully, in my head, what I'd like to see is Finn come back, see he's still going to keep the title. He wants a number one contender for a few weeks' time. Kyle O'Reilly comes out, says, "I took you to the limit, I want another shot." And then Kushida to come out and be like, "I've beaten everyone, blah, blah, blah. I want you. We get Kyle O'Reilly versus Kushida, which would be a lovely technical wrestling match.
Mm-hmm.
No Damian Priest in it this time. No scramble match. Just those two singles match in 10-15 minutes. Yeah. Kushida wins. Finn Balor beats Kushida to retain. Kushida goes full heel. That's kind of what I'm hoping for moving forward.
It's kind of they've kind of got one of those things where they don't really have like a ton of options at the moment, just due to injuries left, right, and center. So they're gonna need to maybe bring people up like they did with Kyle O'Reilly, bring people up who weren't necessarily in the main event before to make them feel main event, and then see if they click, see if they stick with it. So hopefully, a month or two ago, I was shitting on Kushida hardcore. Now it's a different story because they've actually put a bit of effort into him.
And I'd imagine Cross is approaching recovery time, and then that changes everything. So we come backstage to iPad Adam Cole alongside Kyle O'Reilly, Bobby Fish, and Roderick Strong. Says Adam's still injured, the ribs are still sore. He's getting better every day, but the Golden Prophecy 2 Electric Boogaloo is going to begin tonight when Bobby Fish and Roderick Strong defeat Breeze Angle to capture the Tag Team Championship. Really short feud. Mm-hmm. 1-2-3, boom, kind of the catch point. I want to see Adam Cole on a segue at ringside. Thank you very much. I want to see him like in witness protection from Ridge Holland and the individuals we'll see later on. And therefore travel around on a segue. Regal was never going to do it. We were too ambitious with that. Segway Adam Cole, very, very believable, you know?
Yes.
You could even have him be like, right, Kyle, I'm going to do the thing. And he goes, Adam Cole, baby. And then Kyle does the boom over the iPad with a hand pointing to Adam for him because he doesn't have arms. You know? Make it work. Segway Adam Cole. It's what we want.
I think they're about to enter into a blood feud soon, so I'm not sure how much comedy will fit into this in a minute.
This and what this will unwind you through throughout the show is very clearly set up for War Games.
Crap. War Games.
And I don't know who they're replacing Ridge Holland with, because he ain't going to be back for fucking best part of a year.
He'll be back by the time I travel to the UK. That's how long his recovery is at the moment. What's next? Women's division. Hey, Ember Moon's back again.
Yes. New gear, new style. Wonderful.
Yes. In singles action this time. So the last time we saw her in tag match, a big return, that kind of thing. Whereas this time, singles, where we can actually see what she does on her own and see if there's much difference to her style. And there clearly is, because she has a submission now.
Yep, she's done the thing that every WWE women's performer did a couple of years ago and add a submission finisher. And it's like when you're having to like name things as you're live tweeting, I'm fairly sure I call it like a crossface mixed with a wheelbarrow knee bar. I'm going to call it the Blood Moon because that's what she should call it.
Yeah, that'll do. That sounds fine. Suits the vampire matches against, sort of thing.
Matches against Jessie Kamiya, who I think actually came out of this actually looking okay. Ember Moon dominates as a veteran. But she does this nice thing where she's like, no, get up, Jesse, come on, try again. Like, it's not heel, it's like a disgruntled veteran. There was a Cesaro style spinning uppercut from Kamiya as well, which was nice. You know,
it was kind of like the springboard European uppercut, but like kind of landed in a leg, in like an elbow drop as well.
Yeah,
that was nice. Jessie Kamiya, I think, is she's new. We've seen her in the Mae Young Classic. She's gonna come along in time, but I think she's looking good. She's showing promise. I like seeing. The upstarts get some TV time, but not completely squashed. They get a couple of opportunities to show their moves in a little bit, so we can eventually get to know her. Like, you know, she's not you know, she's not a character or anything like that. So, you know, Ember Moon should be beating her decisively. So I thought it was a good use of Jessie, and hopefully she continues to improve. And Ember looks great. I like the submission. And also Dakota Kai afterwards interrupts and, like, basically starts their kind of like the side feud of the women's division of Ember Moon getting attacked by dickhead Dakota Kai.
Yeah. I, once again, we only have, like, 3 rooms. I don't know how there's more humor. but I, yeah, this was, like, a vintage classic NXT squash match for me. Mm-hmm. Main roster squash matches, like, Braun Strowman beats unnamed jobber, 10 seconds, won the move.
Yeah.
This is like, yeah, it's one side and it's dominant and the results thing made. Like, obvious.
Obviously predictable.
For all to see. But do you still leave also being impressed by the other performer? Like, Jessie sold really well.
Mm-hmm.
She got on some good looking offense. She did some good verbal dialogue back with Ember, which was really good.
Yeah.
The attack with Dakota, all for that feud, especially because Raquel is kind of tied up in another thing at the moment. That leaves Dakota to go off and do stuff on her own. Then they can come back afterwards. Hopefully Raquel victorious, but Dakota not, which can lead to some dissension there for down the line. But as soon as the match ends, we get told we need to cut backstage to an emergency interview because Bobby Fish was mysteriously attacked backstage. We get announced that he's sent to a medical facility and is going to be replaced by Kyle in the main event. So at this point, it is now Kyle and Roderick Strong versus Breezango for the tag titles. And then they kind of discuss that this must be the person who paid Ridge Holland.
Yes.
I thought at the point this changed the outcome in the main event because I didn't think Kyle was losing to Breezango. But as we will go to learn to see, Kyle was not losing to Breezango.
No.
the episode kind of took a whodunit storyline throughout, yeah, which was nice.
I love a whodunit.
A little bit of pieces, but and I like that it got revealed at the end of the show as well.
Yes.
Because you remember everything from that show, and then when the reveal gets done, you're like, why didn't I think of that? That's so fucking obvious.
It rewards the viewer for sticking around throughout the episode. Like, it's like all these little bits and pieces, these little segments throughout the show to get into the culmination at the end, the big swerve, the big reveal and everything for a shock result. And I love it when wrestling shows do that because I love a whodunit. Whodunits are my favorite thing. Like, when the reveal is good also. Like, we're not talking higher power sort of situations here. But it was really fun. Hey, Liam, do you remember what I said last week on the Dev Pod, by any chance?
You don't need one Austin 3 match
I said,
every week. You don't need one Austin 3 match every week, and you certainly don't need two.
Yes, and I think I also said, the one thing I don't want next week is for another Austin Theory match where he loses. And what did I get, Liam? I got exactly that.
You got two, Michael. You got two Austin Theory matches, one of which was 10 seconds.
Look, that's helpful. But, like, it's him and Bronson Reed. Bronson Reed's back. Cool. But Austin Theory just, like, loses again, and then we find out afterwards that he quit and, like, did the whole, like, tantrum thing and quit and left, which, like, hooray, a little bit of story development, and also hooray, it looks like we're getting a few weeks of break from Austin Theory.
Yeah, exactly, which is what he needs. I said it last week, the Gargano match was good and would have been even better if it wasn't sandwiched in between 50 million other Austin Theory matches whilst he is being accused of nonsense. Like, just, and you know, the interesting thing about him having this losing streak and leaving, if it leads to him working with the Garganos, I trust the Garganos to make him interesting. But for now, he is a charisma vacuum, and Bronson Reed is also a little bit of a charisma vacuum. So this segment was the second worst of the night. There is a segment later on that we have seen 55,000 times as well, but is it even worse?
Well, we will
get that.
What is next? Oh! Now we get to a very, like, a weirdly intense sort of interview between Casey and Xia Li.
Yes!
Where basically, Xia was granted a match. That's good. William Regal listens. And Xia basically is really saying that it's the biggest night of her life. It's the biggest match of her career. Not the Mae Young Classic, not the Royal Rumble. This match against Casey Catanzaro is the biggest match of her career.
There is no other option. She has to win.
Xia Li must win. And Casey's like, may the best woman win. And Xia is looking very, very troubled. And so forth. Oh,
yeah.
Character development between, like, the D-level women's story. Oh, yeah. It's just, what can you ask for more?
I think I took a shot at AEW when I wrote this up. I think I said something like, it's good to see lower card female talent being given interest in unique storylines. Something other shows, AEW, need to pay attention to.
I was going to say a thinly veiled shot, but, like, there was nothing thin about that.
Yeah. It's one of those where it's like, do I care overly about either of these people? No. Mm. I think Casey's good and promising. I don't think the same with Xia. Mm. But we've now got this added element of what the fuck's going on with Xia. But not in like what the fuck, why is Lana being put through a table again? Like, ooh, I can't really work out where this is going. And as long as the reveal's good, then it's great. You know, it gives her a platform to be on the show without it feeling like a throwaway.
It's always been something different each week. It's always been...
Yeah.
It's been like Xia Li not shaking the hand in defeat and being desperate and shoving Caden Carter down to then getting a letter to then begging Regal for a match to now this week. It's little... step-by-step story developments. It's so simple. It's so simple, but it's done so well. Love it.
Exactly. We go from there to the continuation of another story that I'm very much enjoying. As Legado del Fantasma take on the team of Swerve Atlas and Ashanti Adonis in six-man tag action. We know the story to this pretty simple. We've had Swerve having his issues with Legado. We've had Atlas getting involved, having his issues since the interim Cruiserweight now, permanent Cruiserweight now interim again sort of tournament, and Ashanti Adonis got involved at the last takeover. So this is the sort of culmination of that. This match is great, like really good. It's flippy shit. It was made for me. There was like this incredible straight arrow tope from Escobar to the outside, but then Atlas does a cartwheel, I think it's at the Rainbow DDT, I think he calls it, on the announce table and catches him with a DDT onto the concrete, which is great. Weirdly, a lot of this match happened during the ad break, you know, on the small screen, which is really annoying because they're doing such intricate, really beautiful dives, and like Atlas is doing the Three Amigos at one point, which just popped me as an Eddie fan. Adonis, Atlas, and Swerve are winning the wrestling portions of the match. Legado del Fantasma regained control through underhanded tactics. The talking point of this, however, comes in the way that Legado del Fantasma win. Because Escobar's out on the outside. Mm-hmm. And at this point, Atlas could go back in the ring and they have a 3-on-2 advantage. But instead, he's too busy trash-talking and abusing Escobar, who's pretty much out on the outside, that it allows Wild and Mendoza to gain control and get the win. Meaning that Atlas, who had that heelish twang last week, has cost his team the match through being heelish again. Which I really enjoyed the sort of continuing story of this. Suicide dive into a Spanish fly.
Oh my god. Holy crap, that, like, it looked a little messy, but, like, it's hard to pull that off. That looked so risky, but it looked quite spectacular at the same time.
I appreciated what they were trying to do enough to forgive them that it didn't come off perfectly.
Yeah.
What do you think of this match and the sort of segments around it?
Look, The cruiserweight division is the division I'm least invested in at the moment. It's mainly due to the fact that there isn't a compelling antithesis to Legado del Fantasma, because Ashanti and Swerve are just, they are the babyface because that's the role that they have. And Jay, you mentioning stuff with Jake Atlas, and I'm intrigued at where that goes, and that while that May is also heading towards another person turning heel, that still leaves the problem of we don't have a babyface that anyone is invested in that can take on Santos Escobar. So until I see character development from the likes of Swerve and Ashanti or someone else, apparently 205 Live is still a thing. Someone in there might be able to...
Bollywood Boys came back.
Did
as
they?
As the Bollywood Boys.
Did they really? Huh. But other than, like, the Cruiserweight division is in dire need of some baby faces and some baby face fire because they don't have any at the moment. Swerve has had his shot and he's lost time and time again, so his turn's done. Ashanti is very new. They could do that, but again, they're going to need to tell me more about Ashanti. But other than that, like, the match was good. I know the match was technically good, but story-wise, outside of the Jake Atlas thing, which isn't going to fix the babyface problem, we're kind of in limbo with the Cruiserweight title at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know who they want us to cheer is, Mr. Jordan Devlin over in NXT UK. So it looks like we might be getting something from that. So that'll be a thing that we have.
That
to keep
won't
an
at
eye
all
out
cause
for.
A Twitter storm at all. Not
no,
at all.
Not. Why would you say that? It'll be fine. Maybe. Possibly. Yeah, maybe. Probably not. Maybe. Who knows?
Can we talk about my favorite segment on the show? Please.
Go for it. Go for
it's
it. I'll let you
the
lead here.
It's the Garganos doing the practice spinning of the spin the wheel, make a deal wheel. Candace has made a practice wheel because Johnny is so nervous around it. They've got all the legitimate options on the wheel that Shotzi's going to spin at Halloween Havoc. So Johnny spins it and it lands on casket match, and he's like, he's paranoid. He's like, he's gonna die, yada yada yada. And then like, and Kenneth's like, it's okay, it's just a practice spin. This is why we're doing this. She spins, she gets a trick or street fight. She says, that's cool. I'm undefeated in street fights. Love that little attention to detail. And she's like, no, that's fine. I can do that. That's going to be fine. Johnny, have another go. He spins it and gets buried alive. And he's like, why does the wheel want me dead? And it popped me so much. Just that one line. I thought the one thing, because when he started, he got up from the table and walked off, said he was going to go to bed. It looked like for a second he was going to super kick the practice wheel, and if he would have done that, it would have been next level, like, best segment of NXT of the year. But unfortunately not, but that's fine, I'll forgive it. But otherwise, it was still so much fun. It was a good little promo work for Spin the Wheel, Make a Deal, good promo work for Halloween Havoc. It gets me excited for both of these matches next week in a short 90-second segment. I love the Gargano so much. They're my favourites, and I want them to win so badly.
My favourite thing, as well as it's been funny, is Candice getting trick or street fight and being like, oh, good, I'm undefeated in street fights. And being like, so you are. Yeah, you should want a street fight. That's very sensible. And now if you do get a street fight, I know that, and it's going to make me think that you're going to win. But it's not going to make me think, because you're undefeated, you aren't going to win. So now I don't know. It's great. We're not going to get a casket match or a buried alive match. I am fairly certain we're going to get a trick or street fight and a boiler room brawl. Because if you're going to do something with no fans, like a boiler room brawl, it's no different to doing it just now anyway.
True. But also at the same time, they already are doing Loomis and Cameron Grimes in some kind of cinematic, weird horror match that they're doing.
Yeah.
So maybe boiler room brawl isn't the way that they're going to go.
I just remembered that we're getting that match.
Well, because it's cinematic, it might lend well to Dexter Lumis, and it might be the way to present Dexter Lumis. Because the little segment that we get to later was fun. I just love them. I love them so much.
Yeah, I thought the segment was great. I would have liked a little bit of mention of Indy. You know, just that's a story we're doing.
We might see her next week.
We go from this into tag team action as Ever-Rise take on the Furry and the Fury. And the match only goes about 2 minutes. Maverick's getting tag teamed on the outside, not like that. Get your mind out of the gutter. he's left on the outside. The two of them manage to take on Dane and 2-on-1, just using chop blocks, wearing them down, have them in a submission. Maverick snaps, grabs a chair, and just starts going to town on them. Realizes slowly that he's cost Dane the match, looks terrified. Dane goes over to punch him. Maverick's like, I'm sorry. And then, in the most, it's delivered so well.
Mm-hmm.
That was awesome. That was the greatest thing I've ever seen. Where's that guy been all this time? Yeah. Woo. And he even lets Dane play out the theme. He even lets Maverick play the theme. Yeah, this was really endearing. Ever-Rise get a win. Which is, you know, if Ever-Rise are going to exist, then, you know, they need to get some wins. Maverick snapping makes sense and doesn't come across heelish. And Dane being like, that was awesome, makes sense. Loved it. I hate that I love it. I really hate that I love it.
Isn't it so weird how much we were shitting on this maybe 6 weeks ago, and now it's like, this is awesome. It's so... little character developments as well. Bit by bit, he's starting to come around, because last week he said, only I can hit you, yada, yada, yada. And now this time, they're friends. And he lets the theme music play. Killian Dane, to his credit, delivered his part of it so well. So well.
Yeah.
This is by far the most I've ever been into Killian Dane in his entire wrestling career. So that's amazing. Drake Maverick is magic. I've been saying that for a few weeks now. He's just continues to deliver. There are two milestone moments that we are working towards. Obviously, one is going to be them winning the tag titles, and I'm sure that will happen in time, because odd pairings, they will win the tag titles. That's just how it works. The other thing that we're working towards is the day Killian Dane
does the dance with
Drake Maverick, and hopefully if that happens on the same night, it's one of those things that I so wish there was a crowd, because Killian Dane dancing after winning the tag titles, finally accepting Drake Maverick and his weirdness, that would get such a reaction. That's something like, and I don't normally miss the Full Sail crowd. I would miss the Full Sail crowd for that one specific moment as well.
It just feels like it, because it's an NXT thing, right? Because it would happen slowly over time, especially if there's a crowd the whole time. Oh, boo every time Killian Dane goes to do the dance and doesn't, and then he's like, stop booing me. And then, like, slowly over time he comes, and then they'd win the title and it'd be a big cheer. And then Maverick would look at Dane, look at the titles, go to leave. Dane would put his hand on the shoulder, turn him round, start dancing first. The crowd would erupt, pop in the night. But it's fine. It's fine. We'll deal with social media pop instead. It's fine.
We'll have to. We will have to.
But we cut immediately backstage to more breaking news backstage, because it keeps getting worse for the Undisputed Era, because Roderick Strong has been attacked backstage and laid out. For the second time, a member of Undisputed Era is attacked backstage tonight. No one has seen who attacked Strong, and Kyle's left alone. Kyle says he needs to go and care for his friend. He doesn't care about the match. He's gone. Don't care. He's like, give it to Larkin and Birch. And then I think Birch goes... Larkin goes, no, you beat us. You just choose one of us to team with, and we'll do it that way. And he's like, no, I need to go to the hospital. I need to go see my friends. You guys have the match. So now Larkin and Birch versus Breezango is our main event. And I'll be honest, at this point, my interest in the main event dwindled.
I can see that, because the star power, or the conceived star power for a lot of people, not necessarily me, because I adore Breezango, but for a lot of people, the star power left the main event. And And I do see that, and I understand why that would happen. In that moment, I was like, in my head, I was like, oh, thank God, I think Breezango are going to retain. I think we're going to be fine here, everyone. I was wrong.
It's all fine.
It's all going to be fine. It was not, but we will get there. What was after that? Casey and Zaya. Look, I do love, again, I said it when we were talking about Jessica Mayer, I love seeing up-and-coming people get TV time. AEW, we mention it all the time, but my God, do something about that. And these two have a short little match, only about 2 minutes long. It's something. Both are showing improvement. I can't wait to see what I've said it so many times. I can't wait to see what these two people are going to look like in 2 years' time, because I think that's when they're going to be like takeover ready. But Casey picks up the win, and Zaya, you know, goes all in with the heel turn. She said she had to win, and then she didn't. And she attacked Casey after the match, but then they were both completely destroyed by Raquel Gonzalez.
So the match goes 2 minutes, and Casey gets the win via roll up, which is like, you know what? It makes sense. Xia Li hasn't been great, so. You know, her getting the win would be a bit out of place. Casey's on the rise.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fine with the cemented heel turn. It makes sense. It should have been me. You know, the storytelling makes sense there. What I don't like is then undermining that segment completely.
Yeah.
By just having Raquel run through them. I really like Raquel.
Mm-hmm.
I like the promo. I'm looking forward to her hopefully beating Rhea and like cementing herself as the new like head baddie in charge.
Mm-hmm.
I've realised that's me and Yim, but fuck it. But no, I just feel like it undermines both of these performers. And it's like, yes, we've given you time, but just remember, you're not as important as...
And like Raquel. We didn't need to be told that as well, because we know that these two are not on the level of Raquel and Rhea and the women's title picture. We know that. We don't need that drilled into us. We are aware. That's the only nitpick. I was like, if this Raquel thing was a backstage thing, fine. That, like, absolutely do that. Yeah, it just felt... Because then what happened afterwards, the .com exclusive was Xia Li getting given yet another letter from Boa.
Oh, I've not seen that. Okay.
Yeah, so after the match, she's, like, recovering and stuff. It's during the ad break. She gets given another letter by Boa. So it's like, this is still continuing. Again, what is she involved in? Is her family in trouble? Is it deportation? We don't know. Is she involved in the mafia, the Chinese mafia? We do not know. And the fact that I don't know, it could go 1,000 different ways, hopefully not one of them racist, will be amazing. But yeah, I just wish Raquel didn't like do that. But it cements her as the like dickhead heel and that kind of thing. It's like you can see the merits of why they did that way. But me, personal taste, I would have liked it in a separate thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of those where I'm excited by both components of it. I just don't feel like they should have overlapped. However, with that being said. One thing I wasn't excited for as the segment started, although I am now more excited for as the segment closed, is Cameron Grimes and Dexter Lumis's little segment. Cameron Grimes is basically saying, yeah, I've beaten Lumis and I see why he finally wants a piece of me. He's no longer ducking and dodging, and I'm going to beat him in Halloween Havoc. I'm going to pin him 1-3. And then the interviewer goes, but are you not concerned about facing a man like Dexter Lumis in a Haunted House of Terrors match? And this is clearly the first time Grimes has heard this. He's like, I'll be fine. I'm not scared. I'll be fine. And then from behind this whole time, there's like a window into another room, and Lumis is just looming there. Oh, yep. Looming. Ah.
You get it? There we go. There's that light bulb moment.
Bing. And he's just staring at him. I've not enjoyed Lumis's I've not enjoyed Loomis being overexposed in ring, so this is exactly what I need. Segment uses these non-verbal acting skills and things like that, and if it's a cinematic match, please NXT, finally do a good one. That's all I'm going to say on this segment.
I think this is the best opportunity that NXT has to pull off a cinematic match well, because Dexter Lumis and Cameron Grimes, they are both great at their characters, and if they can... Because unlike when they did Adam Cole and Velveteen Dream or Gargano and Ciampa, when they tried to do cinematic those two things, those four are wrestlers. Like, they are just straight up wrestlers, whereas this, you've got characters in them. Obviously, Cameron Grimes is a great wrestler as well, but he's a really great character, and Loomis is more character than wrestler. So I think this has the best opportunity for it to be great. I want it to be bonkers. I want it to be really creepy. I want to be terrified watching it. It needs to be. It's Halloween. Like, that. It needs to be, like, full-on horror. Like, Dexter Lumis needs to have, like, a weapon, or, like, a terrifying weapon of some description. I am looking forward to it. I hope it's great. I really am hoping for it to be great. I don't want it to be bad.
It should be a haunted house. It really should be a haunted house. And then, like, have a bit where, like, Loomis is on a... And obviously, I know production and stuff, but fucking everything's closed, so I'm sure theme parks are more than happy to let you use their stuff. But, yeah, Loomis should be on, like, a ghost train as a... The match should start with, like, a POV shot of Grimes outside the haunted terror house. And he goes to go in, and, like, in Scooby-Doo fashion, like, a ghost train pulls up beside him and gets in it. And it's taking him through, and he's getting all these frights.
Yeah.
And then Loomis pops up from behind and puts in the kamigurui and all of that. Like,
Spot idea. I've just had a brainwave right now, and if they don't do this, I'll be severely disappointed. Cameron Grimes walks into a room, but it's, like you see it, like, in, like, carnivals or something like that. It's a room of mirrors. And like,
I was going to say, they're almost certainly going to do the mirror spot.
And Dexter Lumis steps out, and he is surrounded, and he doesn't know which one is the real Dexter Lumis and which one's the reflection. Yeah. That would be a hell of a... Like, I don't know how you shoot that without seeing the camera, though. So that is going to be difficult. Yeah. But I'm sure there's a
WWE
way.
WWE, figure it out.
I'm sure there's a way to do it, but that's what I want. If I see that, then it'll be my favourite thing on the show.
They can't go half pregnant with it.
No, absolutely not.
The problem is every other one has tried to be something super serious or overly artistic. I just want this to be fun. That's what I want everything on Halloween Havoc to be. Like, I want Candice and Io to be a great match.
Yes.
I want Johnny and Priest to be good. But I also want it just to be fun. It's not a takeover. It's just it's a fun show to throw back to times gone.
I'm looking forward to this being like more of a variety show where that can be the bonkersness, and then Io and Candice and Johnny and Damien can be the wrestling part of the show. If they nail all of those elements, it could be the best NXT show of the year by far.
Yeah, exactly. They just need to. Just need to be clever about it and make it work. Match placement's very important.
Oh my god, yes.
Probably open with a wheel and close with a wheel.
Yeah.
And then in between. when we've had, like, a very serious match, then sandwich it with the Haunted House of Terrors. You know, so it's all paced out.
Totally, totally.
But it just depends on... It just depends what we're gonna get, really, and I'm looking forward to it either way. If we have a look, we move on from here to the worst segment of the night. Timothy Thatcher presents a live edition of Thatcher's Thatch Can. Let me recap this for you. See, go everything ahead. He's done in one of the other ones. It's the exact same of that, but live and with a new Evolve signing, Anthony Green. And I don't care about it. And it's stale. And can't he please do literally something else. I don't care what, just something else. Literally anything else.
Yeah, it's a shame that, like, the Timothy Thatcher character has been kind of stuck, and also he's kind of lost a lot.
Yeah.
So, it, I'm not saying Timothy Thatcher is in the same level of despair as Retribution, but, like, let's not get stupid here. Let's not try and throw him off a cliff. Yeah, it's like, technically it was different. It wasn't a pre-tape, it was live in the ring, and it turned into a match. It is technically different to what he's done before, but the crux of it is more or less the same. So, yeah, Timothy Thatcher, he needs to be wrestling, and he needs to be winning. And, like, I would like it, like, not just against trainees, but he needs to be wrestling people on the roster and, like, winning. And doing the things that he says he does in the Thatcher's Thatch Can segment, and do that in his matches so we actually believe what he is doing.
Kushida. He is in the position Kushida was up until recently.
Yeah, exactly.
Of like, I don't care about what you're showing me, and I know you're a good wrestler, mm-hmm. but, like, do something, please?
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of, we're kind of stuck in like this endless cycle with Thatcher, so hopefully something can happen in the future, but I don't see it changing at the moment anytime soon.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of the main issue. But it's time for our main event. Oney Larkin and Danny Burch versus Breezango for the NXT Tag Team Championship. Obviously awarded the match by Undisputed Era as a result of all these attacks. Match is going back and forth. Burch is selling an injured leg. Breeze takes a big spill out of the barricade. Fandango gets 2-on-1, but manages to come back, hit the last dance for a near fall. Larkin and Burch doing stereo submissions. Fandango makes a save. Tyler Breeze continues to weaken Burch's knee, which was nice. Fandango is then attacked by a man in a steel mask. Burch then hits a low blow turning heel.
Mm-hmm.
They win the match with the vintage Orton that requires two of them to do rather than the ropes. But it's a vicious one. It's like a brainbuster almost.
Mm.
They're celebrating their new heel title win. The man in the steel mask comes in. He unveils. And it's Pat McAfee. Pat McAfee is the mastermind behind all of this Undisputed Era abuse.
Mm-hmm.
He hired Ridge Holland. He has recruited these two to turn heel. They've been attacking the Undisputed Era. We have a new heel faction on the roster. And given the fact that there's four of them, and there are four members of Undisputed Era, I'm fairly certain in saying it was meant to be Danny Burch, Oney Larkin, Ridge Holland, and Pat McAfee versus Undisputed Era at War Games.
Most likely. Look, I am so conflicted about this main event. I am devastated that Breezango are no longer tag champs. I wanted them to have a slightly... I knew it wasn't going to be the longest reign. I would have liked it to be just a smidge longer. Just a couple more weeks longer. I can't deny how great this was. And how I know it's the right decision. But it doesn't change how sad I am. Because Breezango, unfortunately, are going to be forgotten about in this. They're going to move, and tag titles are going to move on. And Breezango are going to go back to not being tag champs anymore. But I want to appreciate the fact that the two of them have been putting on quite the... their in-ring stuff, like, they've done a little bit of character stuff, not as much as I would have liked, but they've done a little bit of character stuff, but their in-ring it's been great to see. It's like, yes, those two are actually really good wrestlers, and they could have actually been doing more a number of years ago, because they are very good. Very, very good. But, you know, that's my tribute to Breezango, but... Oney Larkin and Danny Burch, you never thought, like, they were always the team that were just going to be around the titles. They never were going to, like, be the team that got the titles. Kind of how I used to think about what Breezango were. I never thought they would actually get the titles. And then, like, you know, you just so happen to have it on Imperium, the dullest team in existence, and then suddenly Breezango aren't the best option. With Oni Lorcan and Danny Burch, they're not particularly, they weren't super interesting, they were just two dudes who I keep forgetting Oni Lorcan isn't British. And then that, but then the swerve that it's Pat McAfee that's been going through everyone, been paying the people to attack Undisputed Era, they cost them now Oni Lorcan and Danny Burch, they've gone full all in with it, with the low blow to get the win. This is the best chance Lorcan and Burch have to be stars, and I'm excited for them. This is a hell of a pairing. Pat McAfee as their mouthpiece. I'm not sure what the go is going forward now that Ridge Holland isn't around, but I'm excited at what this means for the pairing.
You know what I don't want it to be? I don't because they will have to replace Ridge, and that's fine. You know, there's plenty of people we can use. Mainly like someone like Bronson Reed might make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Don't use Cross for it if Cross is back.
No.
For the love of fucking God. Like, this doesn't affect the world title. Cross can come back and we can do Balor-Finn. That's Balor-Finn? Balor-Cross. That's fine.
I too would like to see Finn Balor wrestle Finn Balor. That would be fun.
I'm sure there would be many sling blades. but, yeah, it's good. It's good.
I'm very excited. I'm very excited for, like, because Pat McAfee, because he surprised everyone at TakeOver with how he performed and his character work. We all just thought he was just some douchebag from the pre-show, and he was. But now he's a douchebag.
Yeah, he was.
Now he's the douchebag that we're allowed to boo, and we're meant to boo.
And now he's and who is also annoyingly good.
He has no right to be as good as he is, and it's frustrating, but I like it. I really like it. I like Pat McAfee being a character, and he adds that level of, I wouldn't say star power, but like he adds that level of like intrigue to the NXT universe, I guess. So I'm looking forward to what, because if Pat McAfee's going to be around for a regular character, then the possibilities are endless.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of those where I think as well, what do Holland, Burke, and Lorcan all have? Strong in-ring, like a strong in-ring backlog behind them and good in-ring talent.
Yeah.
What do they all lack? Character, charisma, mm-hmm. mic skills. What does Pat McAfee have?
The
mic
opposite.
Skills for days. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's like, it's a perfect pairing. And you can see it at War Games now where like, Holland would have been out number one. The heels would have had the advantage. Because, of course, War Games makes no sense if they don't.
Mm.
So it would have been like Holland versus O'Reilly. Then out comes Burch. And Pat would have been the last one out. Mm-hmm. And Pat still would have done something mental, like a fucking top cage splash or something.
Yeah, 100%.
If that match happens, they will win. Because the Undisputed Era are still unbeaten in War Games, right? Or no, the Refugee team beat them, didn't they? Yeah.
They've just been in every single one.
Yes, it's kind of their match at the moment. Yeah, so it makes sense for them to do that. And then, see if they do win that. It kind of makes sense to do Finn versus Pat at some point.
Oh my god. I mean, Carrion is going to be back, so... Like,
well, even imagine Pat if again versus Cross. Oh,
the weird, like, I wouldn't say promo offs, but like the weird, like, stares between Pat McAfee and or is it Pat? No, McAfee or something. I think that's how they actually pronounce
McAfee,
it.
But, yeah.
But the weird stares between him and Scarlett. Oh, I've missed Scarlett. Oh,
yeah, I miss Scarlett me a too. Lot.
But oh well. But overall, like, this was a solid, like, there were very few, like, dull spots in NXT. It's very nice to see, like, you know, not everything is for me, and, you know, the Cruiserweight title, it leaves a lot to be desired, and Thatcher's Thatch can, and so forth. But for the most part, If there's only one or two things that you don't really enjoy on a show, and the rest of it is really good and it shows story development and character development, that's a successful wrestling show. So I did really enjoy this episode.
Yeah, it was good. It was very good, and I enjoyed that. Halloween Havoc next week, well, tomorrow.
Yes.
should be a highlight of this sort of COVID period of wrestling.
Mm.
I hope they go full hog with it. Early predictions, the Gargano way finally comes in. We get Candice and Johnny as champions, because Priest is fine, but like Johnny makes more sense, mm-hmm. more star power. And goddamn, Candice should finally be TO. So, you know.
Candice deserves that women's title more than anyone on that NXT roster. So I hope she gets it.
She is the Natalya backstage of NXT, but likable. So.
But also at the same time, like she's the person who's been around there for so long, and it's not like the loyalty reign. She totally deserves it because she's one of the most interesting characters on TV. So I would love it for Candice. Yeah. And I don't care if it's a 1 week reign, 2 week reign. It's just like a short thing. She drops it the next defense in the return match with Io or something. Because she's never beaten Io either. So it's that extra level of can she finally do it? And the Indy Hartwell of it all, like if she, like that will show Indy's effectiveness and will cement her in her role with the Garganos if she can somehow get the title on Candice. So I really hope that that's where they're going. I know Io's great and Io deserves to be champ as well. But I'm Candice's champion excites me.
Yeah, it's one of those where, especially if we get a no DQ match or something like that, it makes perfect sense for Indy to get involved and it to be effective.
Yeah.
If they want to put asses in seats, you could have Asuka come out to counter Indy. It's not going to happen, but it would be nice. But what I do think is we're either going to see both of them win or both of them lose.
I know.
In terms of the Garganos. And the only other thing I think that could be like poetic is if it ends with Johnny Gargano buried alive. if they want to give the Garganos a bit of a break because they've been on NXT for a while, I don't think they need it. And as a fan point of view, I don't want them off TV.
No, because
they might be fucking shattered and need it. Like, I'm not saying you don't need a break. Like, get me, but.
But, like, no, because their characters have been rejuvenated. So it's not like we're dealing with babyface Gargano still and plucky underdog Candice LeRae. They have completely switched their characters around. So, and if you are ever going to do it, do it now. Do it now. It doesn't have to be for very long, but they deserve to have this moment. 100% they do.
Well, the thing is, it also just makes gives them more potential to do funny things. Oh, and funny things are good. Like, they could do polishing their belts, going on a couple's date to get the side plates changed, Indy carrying their belts and nearly dropping one, and then be like, Indy, go sit in the corner, you. Like, there's just a lot of potential, and I love you, and she's one of the most consistent performers of all, but also we're allowed to have little 1 month reigns in between that give people, like, WWE does a lot of, I think, Gary Cassidy put or it was either Gary or Sean Rossat put something up that there's been like 12-year-long reigns in like
I think
or over 6 months.
Yeah, I think it was Sean Rossat. It was, and I have noticed that they really love a long reign nowadays, and they just keep going it. They keep wanting to get to that year point, and in a era where there is so much TV. And there is so much stuff, and a lot of it's just kind of plodding along. God, like hot potato isn't a bad thing. Hot potato can be very effective and has proven to be very effective in times. So I don't like they're proving that with the NXT tag titles that they're hot potatoing it a little bit. It's not ridiculous, but they're not having super long reigns with it.
Yeah.
And I'd like that to have, because the NXT women's title especially, oh my God, you know, it's one of the most protected titles in the company at the moment, because only very select people get to be that champion. So
yeah, exactly.
I think so, like it'll add that moment of that shock moment of, oh my God, Candace won the title on, like, Candace stole the title. I love it when heels steal the title, even if it's just for 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's, and Breeze Angle's a perfect comparison. Like, they had it for, like, what, a month and a half? They did some fun things with it, and it played into a bigger story.
Yeah, about 8 weeks, yeah.
Where they were, like, the perfect person to sort of counter this heel turn, because you do root for them.
Mm.
We've got plenty. Ember Moon is this new up-and-coming babyface that her versus E was a big money match,
mm-hmm.
but she's a face at the moment.
Yeah.
And I would rather see her come in, Candace duck and dodge her for a bit, she comfortably beats Candace in a competitive match, and then you do her versus Io where she's the challenger, where she's the champion, because then Io can kind of go slightly heelish again, because Io is Io.
Mm-hmm.
Io Shirai is the bisexuality of wrestling. Like, she just jumps. Whatever she needs to be.
Hello, for the situation, hello podcast title.
Yeah, we got a shoehorn it in it. But no, overall, great show. Looking forward to next week. Michael, anything you'd like to plug?
Yeah. Check out my socials, why not? At Michael Farah on Instagram, at Michael Farah 92 on Twitter, and on TikTok. If I look at it right now, come on, have I cracked it? Have I cracked it? It's going to be a tough one. Not yet. I'm about like 500 followers away from hitting 20,000. It's crazy. So, help me out. Get me to 20,000. I'll do like a hashtag giveaway or something. I don't know. But anyway,
that'll be hashtag shadow banned.
No, I think I'm not shadow banned anymore. My views seem to be back up to normality again. So that's something. Liam, what about you?
Follow me on Twitter at Liam A. Stewart. Follow me on Instagram at Liam A. Lecture. Check out Inside _ the Ropes on Twitter on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday, where you can see me live tweeting throughout the day, asking some fun questions, getting some engagement going, have a good time, and occasionally I accidentally tweet on there instead of my main. See if you can notice those. Thank you very much for listening. I think we're going to have to be played out by, who was in the main event? Oh, yeah, it's got to be Oney Lorcan and Danny Burch.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
It does.
So, that's going to play now. Thank you very much for listening. I've been Liam Shure. He's been Michael Farah. This has been the Developmental Podcast. Make sure to check us out on iTunes, Spotify, and all other good other podcast providers. Leave a 5-star review and all of that. And most importantly, as always, please remember to be good people.